Cynthia, welcome to the program tonight.
Thank you, Pastor Al.
Hi, good evening. Welcome. I remember we were talking on Friday, and we touched on the Green New Deal.
Yeah. And can I ask you something?
Yes, ma'am.
What is their end goal? Do they want to kill a lot of people or what?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. If somebody wants to know a little bit about it, I'm trying to think of the name of it. I believe it's the Georgia Guidestones, if you Google that or look that up online. One of the uh-huh. things that's on them is this idea of reducing the world population down to 500 million, half a billion people. They want to reduce the world population, and a lot of these things are designed to do that. And I know some of this from some of the people I went to school with that mm-hmm. they view human beings as a virus on the planet. And what has happened with some of these people is they actually view the planet as a living organism. There's something called the Gaia theory or the Gaia principle, where the Earth itself is one living organism, not a living Earth that's filled with living things, but a living organism like you are a living organism. Your body is composed of different parts, different organs, different cells, all working together, directed by the brain and the mind and all of that. And they view the Earth the same. Some even go further than just merely a living organism. They believe the Earth is aware, it's self-aware. And some even worship the Earth as a deity. And so for some of these people, the environmental movement is their religion. And, when we think about people have been in church today and we hear about the dedication that people have. I'm preaching through the book of Philippians at our church right now on Sunday mornings. And as I was going through Philippians, and this is something that a couple of weeks ago I was at, where it's talking about Paul being in prison in Rome. And he talks about how people heard about him being in prison there, and that his being in prison in Philippians 1:14 says, many of the brethren in the Lord, waxing confident by my bonds, are much more bold to speak the word without fear. And I read that to illustrate the point that we as Christians understand the willingness to make sacrifices for something that we believe. We believe the gospel is true. We believe the Bible is the word of God. And we want to carry that message, the good news of the gospel, to the world around us. And many people, including Paul himself here, were willing to hazard their lives and to go to prison, even to be killed in order to advance what they believe. Now, some of these people, they profess to be atheists in some cases. This is going by people that I knew when I was in college. And some of these people, they profess to believe in some nebulous higher power or something like that. But some of them believe that the Earth is a deity. But whatever the case is, environmentalist movement or the environmentalism becomes their religion. And so they are willing to sacrifice. They are willing to suffer. They are willing to do whatever it takes to spread their beliefs. It's a religion to them. When people give up the God of the Bible and even claim to be atheists, they don't cease believing in anything. They believe something, and they'll dedicate their life to something. And when you marry the environmentalist movement with the socialist/communist movement, you have a really dangerous and potentially lethal combination. When the Soviet Union crumbled and Mikhail Gorbachev stepped down as the leader of the Soviet Union, you know what happened to the leader of communism in the world? He moved to California and headed up an environmentalist group. Isn't that interesting?
Yeah, wow.
He moved to California and became an environmentalist. That's where there's an expression that's used sometimes describing the environmentalist movement today as a watermelon. What's a watermelon look like? It's green on the outside and red on the inside.
Uh-huh.
You begin to see the picture? The,
yes.
The demise of the Cold War and people who were dedicated to spreading communism, they wanted to control what you and I say, what we do, even what we think. And when they could not accomplish it directly through the communist movement and getting the workers of the world to unite, it's kind of ironic, isn't it, that Lech Walesa, leader of the workers in the shipyard there, I think it was in Gdansk or something, it was in Poland, but when he got the Polish workers, shipyard workers, to unite, they threw off communism. And that led to the end of the Soviet Union and the end of the Cold War. We won. And God intervened, I believe, through the person of Ronald Reagan. But these people did not disappear. Many of them, like Mikhail Gorbachev, went into the environmentalist movement. They already had a great many friendly people there, people who were friendly to their cause. They had already infiltrated it. And so they moved, the communists and socialists moved in to the environmentalist movement to where they've basically taken it over. And so people like Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, she is a socialist, communist, red, wrapped in the green of environmentalism. And that's what this New Green Deal is. When you start delving into the New Green Deal, you know what you find? Unadulterated communism. You find the government is going to tell everybody what to do, stripping away your rights, my rights, telling you what you can do, where you can go, what you can say, what kind of health care you have, what education you have, what your income's going to be, where you can live, how you can travel. I had somebody that I knew, a friend of mine that I went to high school with, his brother ran a large health food store here in northeastern Ohio. And I had come back from the mission field. I was in the Samoan Islands. My wife and I had planted a church in the Samoan Islands in the 1990s. And I had come back, and his store that he had had a nice restaurant. It had good food, and I'm not going to argue with the food. It was very good. And he was there. And I saw him, and I hadn't seen him in quite a number of years. And I got to talking to him, and we were talking. And this man, and this was about 20 years ago, said to me, the day that Americans can get into the car anytime they want and go wherever they want is over. They need to be dragged kicking and screaming, if necessary, out of their cars and forced into public transportation. See, this is what motivates these people. See, that's, now this man had prospered as a capitalist. He even he voted for Ronald Reagan once. He had prospered in our capitalistic society, made good money, made a good income. I don't begrudge him that. He had a good idea, him and his wife, and they worked hard, and their family involved, and they made a successful business. No problem with that. That's what they provided jobs for many people, and provided goods and services that you might not have got otherwise. Certainly some foods and stuff that I could get there that I probably wouldn't have gotten otherwise. And so all in all, good. But here's Here's that communist heart wrapped up in the environmentalist movement. People cannot have their own lives. They have to be controlled and directed, and we use the excuse of protecting the environment to do it. And when you look at some of the things that are described in this thing, this New Green Deal, we have the calling for the elimination of all fossil fuel energy production. Now, what would that do to our country? Well, we'll just move into solar and wind generation.
That doesn't work.
you can get some out of it, but not enough. And you're not going to be able to get the quantity of energy, especially as efficiently as you can with fossil fuels. Now, think about this, or with nuclear. Nuclear actually is one of the safest. We have the ability to make nuclear plants that are far safer than fossil fuel plants. And the amount of waste that they produce is minuscule compared to the earlier nuclear plants and compared to a fossil fuel plant. You know, with nuclear power supplying your needs, the amount of waste that would be necessary to provide all the energy you would need in your lifetime could fit into a soda pop can, as opposed to coming from, say, coal, where it would take several boxcars worth of waste products to dispose of. And, you know, without going too far afield on the nuclear things, but here's the thing. With coal and nuclear in particular, we have the ability that, you know, we just come through a cold spell here in northeastern Ohio and the northern, northeastern portion of the United States, northern half of the United States up in Canada. Extremely frigid temperatures recently, sub-zero temperatures. Yeah. It was straining the power grid. A lot of people have electric heat in their homes or electric space heaters, electric ovens, and things like that. And when it gets so cold, the power grid is strained and we have brownouts. Well, with coal or nuclear, you have the ability to quickly ramp up energy production to meet that sudden demand. Likewise, in the summer, especially in warmer parts of the country where people are dependent on air conditioning and things like that, and exceptionally hot, and then power demand goes up and they start having brownouts. Remember California with their rolling brownouts? That's because they had eliminated much of their energy production. Well, what happens when you eliminate the ability of people to heat and cool their homes to a comfortable temperature? Well, one thing is the average square foot footage of a house that somebody lives in, if you had to struggle and pay extremely high energy costs, you're not going to want a very big house, are you? Because it costs too much to heat it. I remember when I was in England, some friends of mine lived off base, and they were it was really kind of tight on their family budget, and they lived in a two-story house off base. And they actually strung blankets up so that their heat wouldn't go upstairs. And they were sleeping in their living room because it was costing them too much to heat the house otherwise. And so now what happens? You have to live in smaller houses. People are forced into row houses, townhouses, you know, apartments and things like that. And then it becomes easier to control people. It takes away a little bit of your freedom. Little bit by little bit. You're not going to supply all the energy needs of America and maintain the lifestyle that we have with solar and wind power only. I mean, solar and wind power is a nice supplement, but having studied wildlife biology and a lot of environmental issues and things like that in the past, how do these people live with the absolute decimation of birds and bats that takes place with these windmills? Do you ever hear about that? You don't hear about that in the news. These windmills are slaughtering birds and bats at unprecedented rates. It's incredible. They have to clean them up in the morning. I went out to the Cuyahoga County Fair one year, and I said they had this windmill out there, and they were telling everybody, they were trying to get people to sign a petition at that time to put a string of windmills across Lake Erie. And I said, well, who cleans up the birds in the morning before the people get here? And the one guy looked at me, and he paused for a minute. He says, well, actually, there's more bats than birds. And you go online, you can see videos of birds and bats and things being killed by these. They get sucked into vortex, air vortexes that suck them into the blades, and it breaks their wings or whatever, and they plummet to the ground. And people don't have any problem with that because they don't think about the cost. You know, and I bring that up purposely for this reason, again, going with this green movement and using it to enforce communism and to reduce the world population. You know, God said, be fruitful and multiply and replenish the earth and fill the earth and all. And and they're wanting to eliminate people, doing the exact opposite of what God said. But back in the 1950s, I believe it was, Rachel Carlson put out a book called Silent Spring. And the book was a great piece of fiction, but an unfortunate thing is it was published as nonfiction, and people believed it. And she made a completely false claim, unverified, unsubstantiated, that said that using DDT and these other pesticides was killing off the birds, causing the thinning of eggshells, and the eggs were collapsing before they could be incubated. And one day we would wake up and there would be no birds singing or chirping. The silent spring.
That was a lie about the DDT?
Complete lie. And they used that to motivate. I had that book myself when I was in junior high school, I think is when I picked up a copy of that book at a used bookstore or flea market or something. Uh-huh. And I remember looking at that and thinking, wow, you know, this would be terrible. And a lot of people believed it. They were led to believe it. But see, that set the basis so that in 1974, I believe it is, when President Richard Nixon founded the EPA, the Environmental Protection Agency, which is really the Economic Prevention Agency, and he did that basically to gain favor with the environmentalists. And when he did that, he put the head of the Sierra Club, I believe it was, as the head of the first head of the EPA. And they did a massive study, research into DDT and whether or not it was a threat to the environment. Now, keep in mind, DDT, when it was developed, was one of the best, single best pesticides we have for controlling mosquitoes, in particular malaria carrying mosquitoes. DDT was saving tens of thousands of lives in Africa each year by cutting back on malaria-spreading mosquitoes. And what happened was the guy that developed DDT, he would stir a spoonful of it in a glass of water and drink it while he was talking about DDT in various speeches that he gave. Yeah, I think maybe he finally succumbed at about 80-some years old. But the head of the Environmental Protection Agency had a stack of scientific reports saying that DDT was safe and good to use and should be continued and not restricted. He basically swept it all into the trash can and said, the EPA says that DDT is harming the environment and killing birds, and we are going to ban it. Now, they did that for a reason. They did that so that they could cut back on the number of lives that were being saved from malaria. Now, people think, oh, come on, Pastor Al, how do you know this? How can you believe that? I went to school with people that talked about this, that believed this, that endorsed these things. They don't want to tell you that purposely. Remember Jacques Cousteau? Many of us grew up watching Jacques Cousteau and his underwater adventures. That man believed that the world population should only be 500 million. He was one of them. You and I aren't. And, of course, he's since passed from the scene. But that's how long this has been around. And so communism is a great means of achieving those ends by restricting people's lives and what they can do and the health care that they can receive. And not only that, see, this is like it's just like a monstrous marriage of sorts, because communism also looks at the environmentalist movement as a way to motivate people to say, oh no, if we don't act now, the world will be destroyed in 12 years. Remember, that's what AOC said, 12 years and the world will be destroyed. Of course, Al Gore said that, similar sorts of things. The Prince of Wales said, Prince Charles said some years ago, similar sorts of things. You hear this all the time. There was a book called What was it? The population bomb, I think it was. Paul, what was it? Ehrlich, I think it was. And he said basically by the 1990s, people would be walking around with gas masks and starving, and there would be hardly any food left and no room for anybody. And then he later, in the year after the year 2000, admitted, well, you know, we knew that wasn't going to happen. We just said it to scare people, to motivate people to do what we want them to do.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, the global warming nonsense, all this, it's all the same sort of thing. You know, for those of us that remember the blizzards of the 70s when the ice age was coming, same thing there. All these things, using the environmental movement today, we got to act now. The communists, the socialists are using that to seize control, to implement their positions and their beliefs and to control our lives. And the environmentalists are using the communists to help carry out their goals as well. Like I said, it's a monstrous marriage. Hey, Cynthia, we're out of time today. Got less than 10 seconds left in the program. Thanks for bringing this up for us. And thanks for calling back. And thanks for everybody listening tonight. God bless.